Hello and welcome to HIV Matters podcast. My name is Michelle Croston, and as your host, I will be facilitating interesting conversations with leading experts in the field of HIV care. The conversations will be centred around exploring ways to improve quality of life for people living with HIV. Throughout my career, I've always had a keen interest in any initiatives to improve outcomes for people living with HIV, which has led me to work with a variety of different organisations, with different healthcare professionals and activists. Here at HIV Matters, we hope to use our unique perspectives and platforms to improve knowledge and understanding with regards to HIV. In order to do this, we will engage in conversations with people living with HIV, people who have worked in the HIV sector, and sometimes a mixture of both. We hope you enjoy the episode, and if you have any ideas or questions on this or future episodes, please contact us at hello@hivmatters.co.uk. You can also follow us on Instagram at HIV Matters Podcast, or visit our website at www.hivmatterspodcast.co.uk. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and comment on our show. Today I'm being joined on the HIV Matters podcast by Jen Kendrick. I am super excited to introduce our guest to you today. So excited that I'm worried that I'm going to fumble through her amazing bio. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Jen to introduce herself. Jen, are you able to share a little bit about who you are and where you're from and the amazing work that you do?
Thanks, Michelle. So yeah, I'm Jen. I'm the HIV specialist nursing team leader at the Haddiside Centre at Manchester. I've got there's a quite a small team. There's four band sixes. Myself, I've got support workers, etc. So we're based in an outpatient clinic, part of quite a large, well, very large trust, really, across Manchester. There are other services under HIV services across our service. So we're the Northern service. So we've got two other areas, well, three other areas covered by two other teams. And we're kind of like, we're all working together. So as I say, we are outpatients, but we do have patients that come into hospital that we, our teams go and see when they're inpatients, and we have community patients as well. So we try and get those that can't come into us, we go up to them. So kind of a mixture of everything, which is always quite good, really.
Thank you so much for that. Also, Jen, I'm mindful that you're part of the National HIV Nursing Association. So if your day job wasn't busy enough, you're also forming the leadership of the Nursing Association. Are you able to share a little bit more about that role that you occupy as well?
So yes, I'm joined in 2021, I think it was. I've always kind of wanted to get onto NIVNA. So I kind of always think it's really good to have like that network of nurses across, well, nationally, really. I think I was the chair of the Northwest group, took over, and I think it's just getting those people together, getting ideas shared, etc., and making contact. So kind of led me onto the national level. So I joined, as I say, at first I didn't really kind of know what to expect, but soon quite got into, you know, the education side of things. I really took on the education chair. We were able to develop and deliver some study days, which is for nurses to try and help, you know, education. And the first one we did was confidence and courage. So kind of empowering nurses really into kind of being the best of their ability, and sometimes it takes someone to kind of give you a wee bit of a push. I'm obviously looking at Michelle because you've definitely been a big push with me. And last year I took up the Treasury post as well. So it's something that I've really enjoyed being part of. It's a great bunch in the executive team, but also it's having that, having a bit of influence and being able to help other people. I always kind of look at it as to what would I want and how would I think people would benefit to try and drive it for other people, really. So, so yeah, it's really something that is, I think it's definitely helped me professionally and personally, really. So it's good. get to meet a lot of, it's like a big family really that you extend and meet more people as you go along, don't you? So
thank you so much for sharing that with us. So just kind of thinking about what you mentioned about the service that you run, and obviously we've had conversations about this a couple of times, but I'm wondering if you could share for our listeners a little bit about kind of the issues you faced within the service following COVID-19.
Yeah, so our service, as I say, we're outpatient, so a lot of the nurses and, well, the actual full team across, so we integrated sexual health as well, were pulled to the wards, as like most HIV nurses were, I'm sure. So there was myself, consultant pharmacist, and our admin team were there predominantly during kind of the lockdown period. But then I think when the nurses kind of came back, and they didn't kind of come back straight away, and I think the process of getting them back sometimes really affected the morale of our team. So it wasn't just a case of, right, the nurses can come back now, we're opening up services, we need our nurses back. We had to appeal for them to come back. So I think they kind of felt pulled, really, and I think that had a massive effect on them. I think initially that they were really quite relieved to get back to normality and a routine and somewhere that they were familiar with and obviously felt safe in that environment. And then I think, you know, I think generally, and I think I know from speaking from, you know, people in other areas across our trust and, you know, HIV, that I think a lot of people felt that they needed to kind of take stock of what they were doing. So I think it changed a lot of people's attitudes towards nursing in general, really, but putting their priorities first and necessarily not waiting to make decisions, taking those decisions, maybe instead of thinking, oh, well, maybe I'll change jobs in a couple of years, you know, it's making those changes then and there, really. It's kind of, yeah, I think it definitely affected people in a lot more ways than I think we were expecting to. And I don't think you really realise at the time, do you? I think it's more an afterthought that actually, what am I doing? Really, I want to do something a bit more. Although they enjoyed the job, it might not have been the right location, or it might have been they'd always thought of trying something else. So, yeah, I think it's definitely shifted people into prioritising themselves in a way.
And I think as a result of that, there was quite a lot of shifts within the team, wasn't there? As people went off to do things that they'd always wanted to do, or like you say, relocate, left you with a position where they recruit into the service. So I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. Was it, you know, was it easy to do? Was it hard to do? And I'm just thinking, from my own point of view, it's an amazing career, an amazing job, as we know, but actually, that, how do we kind of shape the next generations of nurses, I guess?
Yeah, and I think this is an area that's faced quite a lot of areas within HIV, really, because we've got a kind of an aging colleagues, should we say, in that, not that they're aging, but I guess that people are, you know, coming up to retirement age. We've got a lot of experience there that kind of, once those people have gone, that experience has gone with them, you know. So I think it was really tricky recruiting into it, because people aren't wanting to come to the jobs, you know. It was, we went out on some of the jobs 2 or 3 times. Now, granted, we were looking for band 6 positions, so, you know, we're ideally looking for someone with experience. But I was also of the mindset of, you know, ultimately, if it's the right person, then you can train them, you know, you can teach people about HIV, you can give them, you know, the skills and the tools necessary to learn. But it was that almost enthusiasm to want to be in the area that was quite definitely lacking within the people that we were interviewing. So, yeah, it was quite tricky, really, some of the interview processing, because it was quite disheartening. You're thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, what's either people are just genuinely very happy where they are, which is completely acceptable, but the movement that I think used to happen across services isn't there anymore. And I don't know, I think, say there's a lot of people think coming into HIV, I think because we're outpatients, the first question I'll ask is, so do I have to work weekends? You know, so it's like, okay, maybe we talk about the actual what job that you're doing as opposed to the hours that you're doing. But saying that, we were able to recruit 4 members of staff, you know, and sometimes someone comes along that completely knocks you off your feet, you know, so there's definitely a lot of interest out there. But sometimes you just kind of have to go through those that are necessarily not so interested, but thinking it might be a nice area to work in. And you can kind of see that from the people that you're interested, that you're interviewing, that there's those that have got that definite push, desire, drive to want to work in that area, because they do, they know the information, they, you know, they've done research, they've got experience elsewhere. And so those individuals was great. So it's like, yep, take, you can come. So yeah, so it was tricky, but you know, we got there eventually.
You've just mentioned kind of that process and finding kind of the right people and then obviously training people. So I'm just wondering if you could explain how you trained so many new people all at once. And
I guess I'll have to ask them on their experience of training, but it to start off with, because luckily it wasn't 4 members at one time, because I think that definitely could have been a bit unmanageable. It was the first nurse that came, there was the previous nurse was just kind of, there was a crossover, so there was a couple of weeks while she was still there. So she managed to get to work with her for a bit, and then it was just great for me, get to see patients all the time. She was shadowing, you know, and then because she was just solely with me the whole time and we were seeing patients all the time, we were able to kind of get through a lot of basic competencies quite quickly, really. And her confidence kind of grew. Then when someone else came, it was kind of like, okay, you can do like basic things, or you can stay and do some like office work or admin work, and then kind of sharing that kind of training, really. And then I think over time, the kind of shift, once the basic competencies and, you know, they're comfortable and competent to be able to see patients, it's, well, one's kind of done on this way, so I can move on and help the other one kind of get to the to a similar level. But I think, you know, it's definitely taught me. I thought that I would have to do it all myself. Obviously, I don't. I'm in quite a big team. So there was also other areas that, so we've got excellent team that we work with in our MDT. So got a lot of consultants, we've got registrars, we've got pharmacists. So, you know, they were definitely able to kind of sit in, and key thing, what I wanted them to do was just sit and listen. Sit and listen to the conversations that you're going to hear, you know, the different ways that people, well, the different conversations for a start, because you don't get to hear that out of sexual health or HIV, the conversations are probably very different, I imagine. So, yeah, it's just kind of getting that understanding of what the kind of the role entails, really. So as I think people found it quite not confusing as such, whereas they were very eager. They wanted, you know, everywhere else they've worked, they've had, right, by 4 weeks, you're on the ward, you're doing everything else, you know. Whereas I'm like, no, that's very different here. And whether, again, I'm very much aware, maybe it's my control issues, I don't know, but the way I see it is that I want them to be, feel confident, feel happy to be able to speak to people in a way that is, you know, easy for them to talk to. So, you know, not taking on someone else's spiel, being confident to ask questions and answer questions, but also not pushing them into a place that they're not ready or unsure of, because I think for me that would then make them feel that they're not ready and they're doing things that they're not able to do, which I think is, plays a big impact in your confidence as a clinician, I think. But yeah, so basically to answer the question, it was just using the resources available, trying to get them to do a bit of their own reading as well. So it's not all coming from me. We do have teaching sessions. Obviously, NIVNA, we've got some basic competencies that we can work with. There's the modules on there. So it was just trying to get as much information about HIV for those that have never really worked in the field, because all four nurses, none of them had actually come from an area where people living with HIV were being looked after. So there was A&E, practice nurse, fertility. So yeah, it was, looking back on it, although everyone's like, you know, it's going to be really challenging, it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't a challenge, but it was, you know, it was just a process that we got through, you know, and we're still doing training. They're not all fully there yet, but I was kind of more, I would focus on one and then making sure that we're getting to certain levels so that it's not just one person getting all the competencies done, first of all. And it is tricky because I'm not always there. So you do sometimes feel that some people probably get more and there's part-time nurses, but I think generally, you know, and they've all developed into a really great team. So very, very lucky to have them.
So you've mentioned kind of lots of ways that you've gone about kind of training the new starters. I'm just mindful that obviously in conversations with you and being part of the team as well, you developed something around simulated learning. I'm just wondering if you can explain a little bit more about that, because I think this is really helpful in HIV nurse education, well, in nurse education, but also in HIV nurse education. So I'm just wondering if you could share a little bit about simulated learning.
So it came about really trying to support the nurses undergo kind of really sensitive, difficult conversations. And to be fair, credit to my original boss when I first started in sexual health, we used to do, you know, obviously we wouldn't call it role play, because as soon as you say role play, everyone goes, no, don't want to do it. But we would practice taking, or we would bring patients coming in with genital symptoms, stuff, you know, it's basically the knowledge. So it was, I thought something that was quite commonly used with you. And I just thought I was doing what everyone else did. But when, so I posted for NIVNA, and when I came to look at the research, for the abstract, there wasn't really very much on there, which, you know, was surprising, really. But so what we do is I would kind of let the nurses ask me questions as a patient, and I would disclose certain things that were, you know, so I would pretend to be that to try and get them to kind of ask questions that they weren't used to asking. Because I think it's that communication that makes ourselves as HIV specialist nurses is key. And sometimes when we're unfamiliar or uncomfortable, you know, underconfident, then we don't always give our best. And what I didn't want, like I kind of said earlier, I didn't want them to be in a position where they felt uneasy, because I didn't want their confidence to be knocked. Because sometimes once that goes, once you think you're getting somewhere, something happens, you get knocked backwards. And again, as much as we learn from that, as I think as nurses, we take it really personally, don't we? You know, whereas, you know, we take it as a personal failure, as opposed to actually it's just something that we learn from, you know. So by doing it in a safe space for them, they can kind of come out of the role almost and say, I don't know what to say here, or what would you say? I don't know what, I've never dealt with someone that's just disclosed, you know, domestic abuse or sexual assault, you know, because these are areas that you kind of have to get it right for the patient side and for yourself. And there's no right or wrong way, but at least if you've had practice and experience in discussing it, then the next time you do feel a bit more okay, I can do this. I can manage. I know what I'm doing. So that's kind of where that came about, really. I've also just used it as a, got a terrible DNA rate. So I would go through as if it's someone transferring in, or side effects issues with the meds. So we'd kind of use it that way as a learning experience, as opposed to, you know, talking about necessarily distressing. So it's used for everything, really. You don't necessarily, don't get to do it as much now because they're all able to do it. But there are times that you think, right, let's just go through this and see how they get on. And you can see the difference from when we did it originally to, you know, further down the line with a bit more experience. So I like to see it works. They feel better because they feel that, as they say, that they are able to. It's the learning aspect of it, you know, and that's how we go about it. I'm not going to say, right, we're going to do role play and you're going to do this, because then straight away, I mean, I'd be out the door if someone said that to me. So by kind of making it a learning kind of process, then it's good for them and for me, really, as well. So
that's brilliant. Thank you, Jen. I think, you know, you've just articulated really well that, you know, we have these challenging conversations. Or not, when I say challenging, I don't mean that in a negative way, but they can be really emotionally provoking. They can, there is that kind of pressure to think, oh, I've got to get this right. But actually having that safe space to explore when things happen, it is a really good way to build not only knowledge but confidence and skill for both the nurse and the person receiving that care as well. That kind of a trial run of thinking about how you would deal with information that's coming both ways as well. So brilliant. So at the start, you mentioned about kind of the changing landscape of HIV care and an ageing population. I think you were referring to nurses, and I kind of put myself in that camp. But also as we take another trip around the sun, we're also reminded that that's fortunately happening for the people we provide care for. So I'm just wondering, what do you think, or what, how do you see the role of the nurse evolving to support people living with HIV care?
I mean, I think I can definitely say since I've been working with HIV, so probably say about 15 years, it's definitely moved away from kind of traditional medical model. It's recently gone on to more of a holistic kind of model. I mean, obviously HIV is kind of where person-centered care, because, you know, it's all kind of derived from. And I think we've definitely moved away to, it's not necessarily it has to be what's best for the patient. So we work in different modes. So say, for example, like ourselves, there's people that can't come into us, so we go to them. So, you know, it's about polypharmacy. You know, Justine, our ACP, she's developed like the frailty clinic where we work with geriatricians. And it's the full geriatric assessment of it's kind of, the term frailty is used, but it can also, there are younger people that are we refer in as well, that actually they're experiencing these mobility issues, or, you know, things that are affecting their kind of everyday life now that HIV is managed. And they manage it themselves, you know, our treatment is excellent, you know, if people are able to tolerate it. So I think it's different models of nursing, and I think, as again, very fortunate in our team, the clinicians are very open to that, you know, with the community cohort that we have, but that's only going to be increasing. And maybe we, you know, at the moment it's the nurses going out, maybe we have to take a doctor with us at times. You know, we've also got advanced skills with the nurses. So again, you know, our ACPs, kind of we manage the community teams with consultant MDT if required. But I think as well as, you know, treatment-wise, probably more, you know, injectables. You know, I don't know. I think it's I think everything's moving forward, and whether a lot of it would be community-based in general, who knows? But I think in that aspect, because things are necessarily moving out of our services, I think our role, HIV nurses, is to educate and to share our knowledge with other people, and kind of not just share it, but not, you can't enforce it, can you? But the knowledge is what people need to know about for, obviously, to prevent stigma and also just general healthcare treatment for people living with HIV. You know, there's still a lack of knowledge out there, isn't there? And that is definitely where we can help to reduce that, I think.
Thank you for sharing that. Thinking about what do you see the role of NIVNA is in supporting people to develop their career in HIV nursing?
NIVNA is, I mean, it covers all aspects, really, I would say, with NIVNA, because, I mean, we've got, you know, as part of NIVNA, there's the research, there's education, you know, we've got events as well. So I think it's kind of using the resources there to kind of build up that knowledge skill, incorporate that into, you know, promoting nurses to increase their education, but also trying to facilitate that in information sharing. I think that we, you know, there's a lot of us that work very differently, and I think it's sharing that to help other people, you know. So sometimes it's like we don't need to invent the wheel, do we? Because there's a lot of people out there doing it. Kind of coming together, really. And I think that would definitely help that sense of community that we have within, I think definitely within the HIV kind of field. And I think NIVNA is there to help people, guide them and kind of facilitate that, really. But it's also there as a tool to be used for, you know, it can be there to make contacts, you know, share things that people need to get across, you know, surveys, etc. So I think it can be used however people want to use it, really. You know, there's a lot that you can get out of it. But I think as well as sometimes just, you know, getting to conference or, you know, building that confidence to speak at conference, you know, it's that helps you then later on in life as well. So I think from definitely being pushed to kind of present and do things, you know, it is just that little bit easier, isn't it? So still, you know, being mindful that everyone's got that imposter syndrome and that no one's perfect and we all make mistakes. But yeah, I think, you know, it's that kind of sense of, you know, it's there for support, really. And kind of NIVNA wants people to, you know, develop their skills and share their knowledge.
So before we get to know you a little bit better, I'm wondering if you share with our listeners any projects that you're currently working on or developing.
So, as part of the Northern Service, one of our other Band 7s is leading on complexity review of our cohorts. So obviously, our colleagues at North Manchester presented at NIVNA a kind of evaluation of the cohort that they had. So, it's using obviously a HARS data set as the complexity level, but actually looking at, you know, the interventions that the patients are receiving, to kind of incorporate into actually where our cohort has changed and the HARS data set and the information that classifies complexity has not. So we're looking at actually what are the key issues that patients are facing and ourselves as nursing are managing. So we've say Ali's done very much the bulk of the work on this, but we're all kind of part being involved in the information gathering. But I think ideally what we're wanting to use it for is to increase our psychology levels. And hopefully, you know, if we can get more nurses as well, you know, that's always a benefit because we do need more input, you know, we do have a lot more community involvement that we need to. There's a lot of mental health and people that are really struggling to get into services. So I hope it's going to be a really good way of us kind of being able to show that, really, because I think we all know it and we all say, oh, it happens, but it's having that evidence, isn't it, to back it up, really. Similarly, myself and one of the other band sixes, we are involved in a research trial that is just kind of in the very early stages of our kind of training. So it's a randomized control trial looking at the intervention of health coaching and social prescribing. So obviously it would be a randomized control trial where some of the cohort would have specific interventions by ourselves who we've had training to be, and it is kind of like an accredited course in health coaching. And so again, it's kind of wanting to implement changes within our service or being able to help our cohort better, in terms of that we can put those interventions in place ourselves as opposed to referring on to others. So again, very early stages for both of them, really, but they're both very, really interesting kind of projects that we're working on, and hopefully will have quite an impact on our service. So hopefully.
I'm sure you will. Thank you so much for sharing that. So before we finish our podcast, this is an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. Can you share with our listeners something you do as part of your self-care?
I think I struggle to think about this, really, because I think as part of my self-care, I think over the years I've done it without really thinking, and it's not, you know, I'm not one to be going walking or, you know, swimming or things like that. I do go to the gym and enjoy it. I've got an hour where it's just me. But I think the more I've gone on, my self-care definitely has been more of a reflective thing. So it's been more, when you're a student and you do about reflection, and I'm talking to someone that used to be a nursing academic. So, but you do think, oh God, when is this going to actually have any use to me? But it really is. So, and, you know, we do it for revalidation. But I think more and more as I've kind of progressed and learned from experiences, I definitely probably step back a bit more and second and take that. What was that about? Or, you know, it's definitely with other people, and like interactions that you have or you witness as other, you know, patients or, you know, just in general, really. And I just think I've definitely learned how to necessarily change my behavior to help other people in certain situations and kind of make it work for them where you can see that they're struggling. So I think that is what I'd definitely put into it. I've become definitely more reflective and try to understand not necessarily the actions of others, but what I've thought or how something has made me feel. And I think it's definitely making it a change from making it a personal thing to a professional thing, you know. So I think it was Gordon Ramsay that I saw to say something, and he said it's not about taking it personally, but if someone says something to you at work or something happens at work, that's a professional thing, you know. So it home a bit, really. So yeah, reflection, I think, Michelle, is my self-care.
Brilliant, thank you. Yeah, no, thanks for sharing that. I think there is something kind of really powerful, kind of, like you said, stepping back, looking at a situation and kind of trying to make it sense of it that way. I think, you know, yeah, I've been guilty of teaching reflection and thinking, gosh, but actually it is a powerful thing to do. So thank you for sharing that. Are you able to share with us a book that you're reading?
So part of the health coaching, there was a book that was mentioned that I have actually heard quite a few people mention, and it's called Burnout, and it's by Emily and Amelia, I'm going to pronounce this name probably wrong, Nagoski. And it's about looking at the cycle of stress and burnout that ourselves as mothers and women experience and the pressures we put upon ourselves and come trying to make those changes. So say it was recommended within this health coaching workshop that we're doing, but also and very much a case of a no from speaking with women that we see in our service, that there is that pressure and that, you know, women prioritize themselves more than other people more than themselves, and it's that pressure building. So it is something that, say, that I've started reading. I'm always one of them. I don't read a book all the time unless I'm on holiday, so I pick it up and put it down. But it is, it's really good. It's looking at ways of how we can, again, I guess, you reflect and make interventions on yourself. So, but it's a way I'm kind of reading it more for my understanding. I guess it's always good for me, but also the way that I can hopefully help others as well.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Jen. I'm going to be straight on the Amazon after this, or another book. Well, HIV Matters bookstore I'll be straight into, aren't I? Ordering it. So thank you so much for sharing that. So going to our final question, and this can be about anything. So it's the magic wand question. If time, resources, money weren't an issue, what would you like to change or see done differently?
That is really tricky, this question. I think, you know, I think I kind of mentioned it previously, really, but I think that there's just a lot of, I don't know, it's really tricky. I mean, obviously, there's the whole thing that I would want, you know, no wars, no, you know, people to be kind, all, you know, but I think a lot of it is equality. You know, I want people to just be treated equally, and also, you know, making it that not everyone's treated differently. I think we see it a lot within our roles, and it is something that you just think, why is this happening? You know, and I just think fundamentally it is just tearing people apart, isn't it? So I think if I could do anything, that would probably be one thing. You know, just take away any, you know, division or opinion, or, you know, just be kind, be nice to people, you know, probably about it, to be honest with you, Michelle. There's a lot, there's a big list, isn't there? But, you know, and I think it's definitely, we see it, we're driven as well. When you see with stigma, get rid of stigma, it needs to stop. So, and, you know, you can see the effect it has on people. It is really powerful that we need to make those changes.
No, definitely. Thank you, Jen, for sharing that. I think, yeah, you've just mentioned that's the kind of thing that powers us through in the work that we do. So thank you so much for sharing your experiences, your expertise and your time with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast today. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle.
Thank you to today's guest and to you for listening to this episode of HIV Matters. I don't know if you're anything like me and are busy writing down the lovely book suggestions made in our show. That's why HIV Matters have teamed up with bookshop.org to bring all these fantastic books to you in one unique place. To find out more about this and how to access the bookstore, please check out today's show descriptions. Today's edition of HIV Matters has been brought to you via an unrestricted educational grant from Vive Healthcare and Gilead Sciences. Gilead and Vive have had no input into guests or topics. HIV Matters is the official podcast of the National HIV Nurses Association. For more information about the National HIV Nurses Association, head over to www.nivna.org. Thanks again for listening to our show. We hope to see you next time, and together we can make a difference.